Hello.
Hello.
Astraea.
Jade.
It's time for Ink Fox and Paper Tiger, and I have a problem.
What is that problem, Jade?
Well, you see, it's 2000, or 2001, and webcomics are big, and I'd like to make a webcomic, but I have a limitation. I can't draw.
Well, you do have some options. You could just have, say, one really cool picture of a dinosaur and weigh on the writing.
Yeah, I could do that. Yeah. What are my other choices?
You could learn to draw while you draw the comic.
Nah.
Okay.
Nah. Okay. I already tried it, and I don't think I want to put in the time.
Well, I did see this comic called Bob and George, which just used sprites from Mega Man.
Now that could be something. See, I would have a built-in fan base of someone who liked those video games, and I wouldn't have to make my own art. Some kind of sprite comic?
Yeah. But you don't want to make it look like you're just doing Bob and George. You should you should probably choose a different video game.
Something like Metroid, for example?
Metroid, yeah. Yeah.
Everybody likes Metroid. It's 2000, and the brand definitely hasn't tanked by now. Today on Ink Fox and Paper Tiger, we read Planet Zebeth by Katie Lynn Tanis Jackson, also called Capitroid, from 2002 to present, although long hiatuses began around 2009. This comic had a very successful update schedule for about 6 years and then slowed down and is basically just a hobby project still. And I want to stress again, as we cover on Ink Fox and Paper Tiger, that's not a bad thing. It's okay [S2] Yep. [S1] For comic creators to slow down or stop if they want to. Their health is more important. Capitroid is from Canada, Alberta specifically, and this was hosted on a Metroid fan site called shinesparkers.net, which is still around, but it's been updated to the modern look of most websites, unlike Planet Zebeth, which is a very Web 1.0 work and has remained that way for basically forever. This website looks basically identical to how I saw it in the 2000s when I read it as a kid. So this is one of my pet topics for Ink Fox and Paper Tiger. I read this when I was like 13, 14, and in like freshman year of high school.
I think I might have looked at it like once ever. There was definitely a period I was poking at webcomics. Something about it seems familiar, but I can't quite put my finger on why.
Well, there were an awful lot of sprite comics at the time, so
yes.
I won't blame you if you got this confused with another one. So if you don't know, if you are somehow immune to the topic of webcomics so far, sprite comics were extremely popular choices in the early years of webcomics. It is a comic that takes sprites from a 2D video game, which can be any 2D video game, but in this case we're talking about Metroid, and it collages them into a comic, usually recharacterizing or recoloring the characters from the original piece. This is a thing that really only exists in the webcomic space.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever really seen anybody else try to make like a long form story out of video game characters quite this way, unless you want to go into like Machinima, like Red versus Blue did. Yeah, but like that's video. I would argue that that's a very different beast.
I mean, you've actually just made a connection that's now making me think about a tangent about Red versus Blue, which is just like, because it does share something in common with a lot of sprite comics, which is that everyone's really dumb and kind of an alcoholic all the time.
Yeah. But like, that was the 2000s. That's how comedy was written in the 2000s. Planet Zebeth, as I said, I read this one at the time. It is about Samus Aran, who was the protagonist of Metroid, and Kraid, who is a villain from Metroid, and a couple of other characters. There's Ridley, who is another villain, and Mother Brain, who is like the main antagonist of the first game. If you don't know about Metroid, the series, don't worry. This comic barely talks about it, besides like the very basic like outlines of the story. Instead of being like the stoic and quiet heroine in this comic Planet Zebeth, Samus Aran is an alcoholic and a violent like a murder hobo. And so is Crane. So is basically everybody.
Yeah.
The chief joke of Planet Zeebeth is that the protagonists are just unstoppable rampagers who murder the minions and the life forms on Planet Zeebeth indiscriminately.
Yeah, they basically get an idea in their head, and then will pursue it to the deficit of anything else, including themselves, usually.
Mm-hmm.
Which often involves Samus killing everything in her path.
Which is, you know, not exactly askew from how the games went, but like, it's for one thing, Samus talks way more in this comic than she ever did in the video games, and for another thing, she never like murdered for the sake of enjoying murder. She was like, she tended to be like more of a survivalist than anything else. In like 2002, Metroid Prime would have been like the newest. I think Metroid Prime would have been the newest game.
Metroid Prime and Fusion came out like literally the same day.
We wouldn't quite have gotten the embarrassment that is Other M quite yet, but we also wouldn't have gotten like the interesting resurrection of Dread. So Metroid for a long time, the series was in a real dark period after the Prime series concluded. The Metroid video games were basically on ice for about a decade.
Because of a combination of Nintendo and Rockstar, because Nintendo said that Rockstar's proto GTA.
Rockstar?
Rockstar's proto GTA Body Harvest, which was the basis for GTA 3 in a lot of ways. Nintendo said to them, because they were publishing it, because they needed more, like, adult games. They told them, hey, could you make Samus the main character of this? And Rockstar was like, lol, nope. And that's why there wasn't a Metroid on the 64.
Cool. it has its fans. It has a lot of fans still today. But it's definitely been through some ups and downs. Kind of like the Sonic series has. The Sonic fandom has had some... We might actually cover a Sonic Sprite comic at some point, but like, no, both of those series have been through a lot and their fans have put up with a lot over the years.
Yeah, I can't relate to that. It's not one of my favorite game series or anything.
Sprite comics as a topic are that you don't see them around anymore, hardly ever. For a couple of reasons. The biggest one, I think, is that a Sprite comic, because it uses copyrighted images and materials from a video game without the permission of the rights holder, it's basically impossible to monetize it. It may have been easier back in the 2000s before automated copyright striking was a thing, but today it's basically a non-starter.
Yeah.
Webcomics are very different today than they were in the 2000s, because today you sort of start a webcomic with the intent of making it into a brand more than like a hobby project, usually.
Yeah. And it's hard to do that with sprites that you don't own.
The only real example of that I know of off the top of my head is when 8-Bit Theater decided to get itself printed as a stage script with no images included at all, because you can't. Every image in 8-Bit Theater is owned by Square Enix. So the print version of 8-Bit Theater includes no pictures. It's just a script.
8-Bit Theater was sort of also partially a promotional project for like Clevenger's other stuff, because Clevenger was writing a book, but that's a different comic. But it's hard to talk about this comic without talking about Bomba George and 8-Bit Theater, because those comics are why stuff like this happened. Boy, does this comic happen.
Yeah, this comic happens. Planet Zeebeth is... I won't say I didn't have fun, because it was really fun going back to a couple of specific things in this story. But Planet Zeebeth is one of those comics that kind of goes in circles.
Yeah.
The storylines that it starts are often very short, like less than 50 strips apiece. Reading it is a pretty fast go, but like it's extremely repetitive. The go-to joke on any given page will probably be tormenting small animals or talking aliens. Or drinking, or arguing, or the fact that Kraid is constantly trying to creep on Samus because Samus is the only woman for 1,000 light years.
Wait, this is repetitive. We should do another arc about them trying to get the raw materials to make the booze in the first place.
We will say, you read to, what was it, like comic 600? And then
600-ish, and then I like read samples of it to be like, does this just keep going? Like, yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and I myself made it to comic around like 950. out of 1300. I would have finished this comic all the way because reading it doesn't take too long, except that that would have been around the time in real life when the creator was going through a lot of real personal things and long hiatus has started to happen. So that would have been about the time that I dropped it in real life.
Yeah, the cycle just keeps going. The plot cycle just continues forever.
This comic has basically been the same for 22 years. And why shouldn't it be? It's a hobby project. It's fun. The creator has fun doing it. I have fun reading most of the strips. And I especially remember the single best part of this comic, which is the Crocomire Hunter.
The Crocomire Hunter, yes.
Who is, originally he starts out as a parody of Steve Irwin, the Crocodile Hunter, except he's like, I think he's Simon Belmont's sprite from Castlevania. Yeah,
that is Simon Belmont's just sprite.
Talks in this over-the-top Australian accent.
And it's interesting starting him out, because like when he gets introduced, I'm like, oh, that's how they're going to expand this, right? They're going to like have characters from other sprite, from like other games, and eventually there's going to be like more original characters using alternative sprites like this, and we're going to get a lot of those. And nope, he's the only major character in it who isn't represented by a Metroid sprite besides Cabutroid herself.
Yeah, Cabutroid herself appears throughout the story as not just the author avatar that a lot of comics do, but like a participating character, like an actual deity in the strip. It becomes a framing device that Planet Zebeth exists just on her shitty computer. And yeah. The reason that it has like canon, contradictory canon and nonsense physics is because her computer is running like a shitty old FTP that uploads at really glacial rates.
Leading to, I think, my favorite gag in the entire thing, where they get stuck in a transfer, and so for like a couple weeks, all of the comics are just a screenshot of the FTP files of their JPEGs.
Yeah, it's like Samus.obj and Craig.obj.
Yeah.
They're just literally lines of text on a spreadsheet talking to each other. It's kind of funny.
Going insane because they can't do anything because they're stuck on the spreadsheet forever.
It's very surrealist and very, it doesn't even pretend that there's a fourth wall. I like that a lot about independent hobby comics, is that they don't really have any pretense of telling a deep or complex story. They're just there to have fun and throw things at the characters. Chiefly, the storytelling mechanic of Planet Zebeth is that Cabotroid is tormenting these small creatures, these small digital creatures, who are in turn tormenting each other. And that's funny for a while, but that turns out to be like the only joke the comic really has after a certain point. And like, if you get bored of that, I'm sorry, but that's really all that there is.
With the eventual payoff and punchline, which I can imagine would actually hit pretty good, or in a I can't believe how infuriating that is, that literally the entire point of all of this was just that Cabutroid was hoping they would relocate the Metroids to a place where they weren't eating the booze crops. That wouldn't have existed if they hadn't existed in the first place. It's a hell of an ending that they're just like, oh yeah, the Metroids are just over there eating stuff we can't use for booze. And they won't eat the booze stuff, and they're happy over there, and that's the end of the story. And now they're all friends.
Yeah, but then the story keeps going anyway.
Yeah. Supposedly it's an epilogue, but considering there's like, at last count, like 50 more strips of story, according to the author, yeah, I don't think it's an epilogue anymore.
Not necessarily, but like, again, doesn't have to be. Yeah. This doesn't need to make sense. Crocomire Hunter, I think, is kind of the only interesting character, mostly because he's the only one who doesn't like cruelty and indiscriminate murder. So he's an interesting opposition to the other cast members, mostly because he's the only one who bothers to be nice. But this doesn't make him smart or good.
Yes.
It just makes him more relatable. Although I say that whether or not a character is smart or dumb in any given scene seems to be a total crapshoot.
Yeah, they seem to be situationally really good when they have an obsessive goal, like how I would describe this. Like, the characters are very, like, focused on things. Like, they have one object that they're trying to pursue. Yeah, and basically every arc is everybody gets a thing they're trying to pursue at this given moment, and they all have their objectives clash against each other. It's kind of like a more repetitive version of Always Sunny in Philadelphia, including that they all just end up back at the bar after their schemes collapse over and over and over again. I did like the SR388 arc, since it was specifically built around the weird structure of Metroid 2, where you have to like kill a certain number of Metroids.
Yeah, the brief derail into the plot of Metroid 2.
Yeah,
the Game Boy one.
And like, unlike the main comic, actually pays close attention to the mechanics of Metroid 2.
Yeah, and that a couple of characters die permanently, but come back because they saved their game back on the other on the other planet.
Yeah, one character getting tormented because they respawn when the screen scrolls away, but somebody won't leave the screen for them to respawn. They perceive being dead, though, which is weird. But also that it keeps, like, a lot of the consistent rules. Like, at the end of Metroid 2, Samus can only get through it because she has a baby Metroid helping her get through these weird little blocks. And the baby Metroid is, of course, because this is a webcomic from the 2000s, gets killed immediately. But the Metroid Queen becomes a main character, and the Metroid Queen can eat those blocks because they're Metroid food or something?
The Metroid Queen, whose name is Ophelia.
Yeah, I kind of love Ophelia.
I like Ophelia.
Yeah.
Mostly because she's another one of those characters who is not necessarily an immediate alcoholic, and because her sprite is very big, she doesn't move around very much, so she doesn't join them on their murder spree adventures.
And she's, like, actually pretty friendly, is the other joke that I like, that, like, they're building this to, like, oh, they're completely fucked, and it's like, fortunately, the Crocodile Hunter has been hopping into, quote, play pods, which are the husks of Metroids that evolved into, later stages of being a Metroid. It's part of Metroid 2. Don't worry about it if you haven't played the game. And after rolling around in discarded Metroid chrysalises, essentially, the Queen Metroid didn't eat the Crocomire Hunter because he smelled like a Metroid.
That's Crocomire Hunter's whole shtick, is that he wants to preserve all animals and alien life, and he's kind of an homage to Steve Irwin, and that he's also like a conservation naturalist. He wants to observe animals in their wild habitats, and he hates when people kill them for no reason, which makes him the antagonist, question mark? He's often at odds with the rest of the cast, but like, he's also the most likable one when he realizes that his glitchy pet might be responsible for the death of all his friends. He has the most amazing line in the whole strip, which is, "I think me actions have condemned this planet to it and my utter destruction." I just couldn't. I can't hate him. He's too funny. Yeah. He's too sweet.
I mean, like, in the SR388 arc, I like that he just realizes that they will kill him, so he hides in a bush and grabs the power-up that lets him crawl on walls.
He just becomes Spider-Man.
Yeah, so just crawls on the ceiling for the entire arc, doing something we don't find out what's going on until the end.
He's always slightly over there, or on the ceiling, doing his own thing, which kind of makes him, the best part of the comic, honestly.
Yeah, well, I mean, he does more stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he does different stuff.
He has a whole side series where he just hunts different monsters.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, in the bonus section of the website, there's a whole list of strips where Crocomire Hunter tries to wrangle or observe different monsters from Metroid and other games.
Which does remind me something about this whole comic, which is that there's like fractal spin-offs of it, I would say. Like, there's several official spin-offs by friends of Cabutroid that are preserved, but
yeah, Cabutroid collaborated with other Sprite comic authors named Cyrus and Lady Icy and Hiroshi, though none of these people update their comics any longer. So it's been a long couple of decades between the heyday of Planet Zebeth and the current day of Planet Zebeth. In that time, Cabutroid was originally masculine, then genderqueer, and finally came out as a trans woman in, I want to say, 2015-16. Yep. And interestingly, she went back through the Zebeth archives and re-edited almost every instance of her pronouns, which is something that only a webcomic can reasonably allow the author to do, which I thought was kind of neat. You don't see that in print comics very much.
Yeah.
Just decide that you're going to reissue your whole series with the proper pronouns.
Yeah, the absurd amount of work that must have taken, too.
Yeah.
Like, she seems to have practiced a level of backup discipline that nobody does.
Yeah, we certainly didn't see this with Fuzzy Knights or T.H.E. Fox.
Yeah, like, all of this stuff was apparently there, because the digging I could do on this, a lot of this has gone up and down multiple times.
I did see some of her transition timeline photos, and she looks so much happier now.
Yeah, you go from the beard to the grins.
To the ponytail. Always,
always love that. Always love
always
that.
Always cute.
Yeah, the incredibly incredibly depressed always has the beard. No trans woman has grown a beard that looks good before transition. It's not possible.
I'm sorry, it's not.
Somebody
who used to have one, yeah, it's one of those where, like, I didn't shave because I didn't want to think about it.
Some people can after they transition, like, if that's how they're feeling. But before they do, impossible. But speaking of trans stuff, there was definitely a, and I was surprised it didn't go on longer or become a recurring thing. This comic did have one of the hallmarks. That seems
one of the great, hallmarks of webcomic writing is the body swap storyline.
Yeah. Especially the body swap storyline where a guy and a gal switch bodies.
Yeah, Samus switches with Crocomire Hunter for, doesn't last very long. It's like 30 strips, tops.
Yeah.
But Crocomire Hunter gets to play around with the power suit and just jumps into lava and doesn't get hurt. And then, like, hits himself with missiles just to see how it feels. And then Samus gets stuck under a box and she's too weak without the power armor to lift it off herself.
Yeah. The box is a weird ongoing gag.
Yeah, it's not very funny.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of characters, there's like two characters who are stuck in / on a box, and every time they appear, they beg for death because they can't die and they can't break free. And the other characters just pass them by without giving them the sweet release of doom. And it's, I don't laugh. It's just not interesting. I don't know why it keeps coming up so much.
The better joke was when Cabotroid decided there needed to be an explanation for why there was a box, which meant that there had to be trees, which meant there had to be a reason why there were trees, which is way better than the rest of the box joke.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of, like, I read the creator's notes on every strip, and, like, there are an awful lot of examples where, like, somebody writes in to complain about how the comic doesn't quite make sense, and, like, there's a logical inconsistency. I'm like, who cares? Why did you write a whole comic explaining this niche thing that some rude person wrote in to ask about?
It's that seems to be a recurring theme, though, of the reaction to your hostile fan base.
Why do so many webcomics have hostile, nitpicky fan bases? Why did authors bother to entertain them?
Yeah, I mean, especially with something like this. You know, remember, it's just a webcomic. You should really just relax. At the same time, that does kind of feel like it's starting to presage stuff. Like, when I've talked about, because you can't ever entirely get away from Homestuck and Problem Sleuth, it feels like it's starting to presage that, with, like, how Problem Sleuth, early Homestuck, both are assuming a hostile audience reaction and are building both audience interaction into the story engine of their comic, and also the presumed hostility into the comic.
I guess the prevailing idea at the time was that when you wrote a webcomic, you would inevitably get adversarial readers, which, again, that's part of the bad webcomic wiki era, but also just part of, like, old internet, where, like, if people were way less chill, if you can imagine that. They were somehow less chill than they are today.
Well, I feel like a lot of the things people are less chill about are, unfortunately, more important issues than the quality of webcomics. I think that's the big thing, is that, like, I don't want to say, and then people were never horrible before that, but it does kind of...
But they were horrible about such meaningless things.
Yeah.
For the first time, although I would call Cabotroid a Sona, a Metroid Sona, I guess, Cabotroid doesn't seem to be a furry.
Yeah, welcome to our segment of, was this written by a furry?
I mean, no. Usually the answer is yes, but that's just because of the topics we've been picking.
Yeah.
We should really start moving away from that.
I do think, you know, we've talked about the repetitiveness of this comic. I think it would work better as a comic you're reading on a, you know, couple times a week basis or weekly basis.
Yeah. Apparently she updated very often, like 3 times a week. Because I want to say 3 times a week for 6 years, even if it is a Sprite comic. Impressive.
Working ahead, but specifically having arcs where there wouldn't need to be a lot of new art while she worked on more complicated assets or more complicated scenes is a level of planning that is really impressive, and I think maybe more, especially like comedy webcomics could probably use. Mm-hmm. Of, hey, this is a lower, not effort necessarily, but lower labor page.
There's a lot of low points, though, where, like, she just stops to journal about her, like, road trips or, like, how she lost her job or how she got a new job and how tired she is. And I was like, look, I know that it, like, doesn't have to necessarily be a narrative, but, like, they just take up an awful lot of time.
Yeah.
And I did read them all because, well, I wanted to know what was going on in the time period, but like there's like no jokes. She just sort of stalls for a long time. It's like, it's like, is this a journal comic or like an emotional spigot comic or just something that, is this just how you blow off steam? Is this even storytelling after a certain point? I don't know. If you want me to extrapolate, even if this comic does continue longer, I can't picture it changing very much. It does the same shtick repeatedly. And again, it's allowed to do that. I don't see any problem with it. Predominantly, the jokes in this comic are the characters are violent, the characters are alcoholic, the characters hate each other, and like those are like the stereotypical like quote unquote masculine topics for any amateur comic writer. There's not much talk of like personal feelings or character depth in this story, and that might be a projection on the part of the author's previous gender. But then again, an awful lot of people just write comics that way and don't examine themselves. Yeah. So it could be either one.
I do think it's interesting that the arc right now, from what I saw of it, the joke seems to be everybody on Zebeth is getting along, except that Mother Brain is still doing the same old the same thing they were doing before. It keeps failing because everyone is just kind of in a weird slice of life comic now, and she's trying to do the old comic, which is interesting in a kind of meta way.
Yeah, I did like the running joke about her trying to make an evil bread monster. That was kind of funny.
Yeah.
What else did I want to talk about? Crocomire Hunter. Steve Irwin did die, famously, and yet Crocomire Hunter is still in the comic. He is a strange homage to someone who hasn't really been in public consciousness in over a decade.
There's a phenomena in webcomics I do love where someone's like, okay, so we have this character who is a parody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the comic keeps going on and on and on, and this one-note parody character kind of just sticks around becoming a not parody character, like the entire cast of Sluggy Freelance after a certain point.
I've actually never read that one.
That's a project. That's
Is that going to be a multi-episode thing, Astraea? Is Sluggy Freelance going to be multiple episodes?
It would be. We would have to like do training for that one. Oh my god. It's just very common to see one note character very specifically pop culturally relevant, and then they just stick around after the relevancy.
Speaking of irrelevant pop culture jokes, you had a specific point where you groaned because at one point Craig just says, "Get in my belly," which is a quote from Austin Powers 2.
I think, yeah.
A film that came out in like 2001, I want to say. And
this was
and the strip came out in like 2004.
Yeah, I mean, I was like,
it was already passé.
Well, it was passé, but like everybody referenced that for years because everything moved slower then.
Yeah, I don't mistake my words. I am glad that memes move faster today, because if a joke is not funny, you won't see it in like a matter of weeks. Whereas we had to deal with like Austin Powers and Crazy Frog and Badger Badger Mushroom and All Your Base for fucking ages. They didn't go away.
I've been enjoying the change in rhythm, because it was right after they introduced the Queen Metroid as a character who, you know, balanced out the cast a little bit, because she was another positive force. She's threatening but friendly. And then all of a sudden it's like, this is the lowest joke you could ever possibly make, which is a reference to a joke that wasn't even funny in Austin Powers. Yeah, I'm not even saying it wasn't funny then from a, you know, like, fat jokes are shitty kind of way. I mean, it wasn't funny. It's not funny.
It's never been funny.
I'm
just going to say this. Reading Planet Zemeth, I hate Kraid. I fucking hate Kraid. He's awful. The comic pays an awful lot of attention to Kraid, who's just this like gluttonous creep who seems to soak up so much punishment and yet never faces real consequences. He's the whipping boy in a lot of jokes, but like he's also he just sticks around and he just does consistently awful things and nobody likes him.
He's like the embodiment of 2000 webcomics. They all had like some guy like this, or a couple guys like this, and Kraid's just all of them.
Just, it's not quite like the Eric Cartman character, who's like just bad and yet remains around because they create the conflict. Kraid is like arguably the protagonist in a lot of ways, but like there's just no empathizing with him because he's just such a dick. He constantly creeps on Samus. He eats everybody else's food. He has annoying habits like collecting pogs and naming every single one of them a unique name. Are you meant to find these things funny or charming? Because I don't.
Yeah, or are you supposed to hate Kraid because Samus hates
I do.
Kraid. Yeah, yeah. Nobody seems to really like Kraid. And
yet they keep him around.
I think we might be describing a nerd dynamic here.
Yeah.
Wow, it's that one friend. Can't quite shake them. The Kraids of the world. I do like reptiles with spikes in their back when they're not dicks, though.
But they're so rare to find, aren't they? It's hard. Yeah. It's hard to find good reptiles when you need them.
And there was also just me kind of wondering, okay, so how well known would some of these games have been at this even slice of time, like Master Higgins from Adventure Island? Like, would that even be widely remembered at that point?
I mean, I don't know who that is today. Yeah. So.
But like, yeah, no, this would have been right after like the decent NES emulators popped out, which is half of how they got these sprites back in the day. Like, they didn't even, like, they got ripped from emulators as much as they got ripped from anything else.
The emulator ROM hack scene got really big in the 2000s, largely because I think those games from the 80s were in their peak nostalgia period, like 20 years after the fact, because like AVGN was pretty huge at this time. And it leads to this weird thing where like Bob and George is like the Mega Man sprite comic and 8-Bit Theater is the Final Fantasy sprite comic. And I don't really know if there is a more well-known Metroid sprite comic. There probably is, and I just haven't read it.
I mean, there were half a dozen of them referenced on this site. Savage Boredom. And they're all identical. They all not exactly identical. This was the best of them that I saw. Cabutroid definitely has a better, like, sense of comedic timing and pacing for jokes than any of them did. But yeah, they're all, everybody hates each other. This random enemy is hanging out with Samus. That's like all of them.
It's just the idea doesn't really lend itself to a lot of flexibility. If you bend it too far, it will stop being Metroid. And if you stick too much to Metroid, it won't stand out.
Yeah, it really illustrates like the advantage that 8-Bit Theater had, which is that Final Fantasy has a vague but extant story and progression to it, so it's a lot easier to build an ongoing webcomic around it.
Final Fantasy, like the fantasy genre, also overlaps with D&D, and an awful lot of 8-Bit Theater is D&D jokes or other fantasy jokes. It can embrace its parody and its pastiche in ways that don't necessarily mean sticking to the video game.
And Metroid is, well, it's an alien pastiche. It's a combination of alien and a bunch of 80s anime stuff. But like, yeah, it's primarily alien. Alien itself has a problem of building more material for Alien.
Oh yeah, as somebody who loves Alien and Aliens and doesn't like any of the other movies. I feel that. I can't really picture like making a serial comedy series out of those two movies. Although, depending on your take, that might be exactly what we have now.
Oh boy. She sure kept running in the path of that giant wheel-shaped spaceship.
Yep.
Prometheus.
The 2000s were a different time. Comedy was different. Sensibilities were different. And what you could do on the internet was different.
There's a thought that isn't really relevant to this comic that I hope to insert somewhere at some point. So you should...
Go ahead.
Probably this, which is... Somebody had linked in a forum I was hanging out on to the current episode of The Amazing Digital Circus, which is one of the current, you know, amazing generation of indie animation. And something clicked when they were describing it, and I was looking at it, and when I say amazing, I mean the character designs are good, the animation is really well done, but the thing about it was the writing felt exactly like a 2000s webcomic. Uh-huh. People basically hate each other. They're constantly being tortured. They're actually stuck in a computer in that one. by a mysterious force that's controlling all of them. And they all have to complete absurd objectives with a constantly oscillating amount of how much they're friends versus how much they're enemies. There's even a likable guy with an Australian accent in the second episode.
Huh. Okay.
The thing about it is, it's not that good. It's not that good, except for the animation. Boy, I really hope some of these animators get, like, real good writers, because their skill is amazing. It's very much this same kind of arc, with perhaps a lot more Disney influence, which is a thing that, like...
Well, that does kind of overlap into the big theory of the great animation backlash. Is maybe we're finally tipping back in the other direction, where people who have these sensibilities can animate again instead of having to wedge themselves into the webcomics.
I do have a bit of a dark thought about that, which
What's
is that?
That
it's the next step up from the bar for like entry for a commercially viable comic has just, you know, gone up and up and up. So instead of I'm an enthusiastic amateur who's going to attempt to do this thing, has now gotten to the point where if you need a following, you need professional television or even movie quality animation for it to be a thing that people will like glom onto.
Hmm. I hope that's not the case.
Boy, I hope it's not the case.
Cause,
especially because there's going to be a lot of animator burnout after this batch, let me tell you. That's not
something there's, people talk about. I mean, about animator burnout is just a fact of the universe. I'm sorry to tell you that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know that. But, like, a lot of these are, it's going to be indie. It's going to be different. It's not going to be different.
We shall see. I think that about covers us for today, wouldn't you say, Estrella?
Yeah, I think that does. I think that just about does it. We really squeezed blood from a stone in this one.
That's about all I've got to say about Planet Zeebeth, except for one more thing. Cabotroid, if you're out there, thank you. You got me through an awful lot of bad times when I was a teenager, and I'm glad that you're still kicking around. What shall we do next time?
There was a comic I was actually just thinking about the other day, and I kind of was wanting to do something we could chew over and be good, and I'm looking at our list. What about Brood Hollow?
I don't think I've ever read Brood Hollow. I'm interested.
I think it's one of my absolute favorites.
All right.
There's a lot of both the comic to chew on and a lot of stuff around the comic to chew on.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for episode 7, I suppose we'll do Brood Hollow.
Yeah.
I am excited. I've never even heard of this one before. And I got my pet pick, so I guess it's fair that you get your pet pick.
It's Chris Straub.
Okay. Where can people find you, Estrella?
I'm Automatic Tiger, like, everywhere. I'm still sort of on Twitter. I'm kind of on Blue Sky. As usual, co-host is the best way to see actual thoughts I actually have.
And you can find me at Cups of Jade on co-host chiefly and on my link tree for everything else. It's been a pleasure. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.